Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 Human Services and Healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was in Rockland County this week to announce funding for security infrastructure following the December machete attack at a rabbi's home in Muncie, and he reiterated proposals from his State of the State address. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
New Square Mayor Israel Spitzer introduced Cuomo, who first visited Muncie hours after the December 28th attack that occurred during a Hanukkah celebration.
You build a bridge called Mario, Governor Mario Cuomo Bridge. That bridge is meant to connect Rockland to Westchester. I want to let you know, since you came that morning, you are building bridges in the county.
Thank you.
Okay? By being here, being an example, taking a lead, showing leadership, we are privileged now that your bridges are being built to connect Rockland to Rockland.
Cuomo, standing with Spitzer and other local leaders at Ramapo Town Hall, said the state would help New Square and surrounding communities.
I want everyone to know that we have learned from Muncie, a painful lesson. We've learned from what's going on, and we will respond, and we will react, and we will do everything in our power on every level to make sure this horrific act doesn't happen again.
Muncie resident Joseph Gluck noted the suspect's license plate number during the attack, and the suspect from Orange County was then apprehended thanks to a license plate reader at the George Washington Bridge. Ramapo Supervisor Michael Specht said shortly thereafter that he would seek funding for license plate readers to be installed throughout the town. Here's Cuomo.
Mayor Spitzer said he wanted more license plate readers. I said, can't we just get 100 Joseph Glucks and put them on all the corners? He said, no, we need an electronic system. So today it's my pleasure to announce $340,000 to install those license plate readers all throughout the community as a safety device.
Cuomo is directing this funding for the Hasidic community of New Square, which is within the town of Ramapo, and is directing the same amount of funding to Ramapo, also for license plate readers and security cameras in and around Muncie. First Deputy Superintendent of the New York State Police, Kevin Bruin, says license plate readers also act as deterrents.
It will not only help us capture criminals, it will also help us deter folks from committing these acts in the first place.
Cuomo hopes state legislators approve a number of measures this session.
And we want more funding for more state police in the hate crimes unit. I want a domestic terrorism law that prosecutes what we saw in Muncie as what it was, which was a form of terrorism. When you attack a large number of people based on their religion, based on their race, you are a terrorist.
And he wants to see education initiatives similar to what some in the Rockland community called for following the stabbing attack.
I want to see every New York State public school teach our young people, our children, about diversity and racial tolerance and what it means to be an American and what this nation was really founded on. I want a cultural awareness specifically about the Jewish community. And I want to expand the Holocaust Museum that we have in New York City, which is a great facility. And I want to see school children going through that Holocaust Museum as part of their education.
At last week's No Hate, No Fear Solidarity March, the Democratic governor announced an additional $45 million in available funding to help protect New York's religious-based institutions, including non-public schools and cultural centers, against hate crimes. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College,
for the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Quite a legislative fight brewing, Alan. We've been talking about this issue. Some things have shifted a bit. It's bail reform. These changes took place January 1st, these new reforms the majority leader of the state Senate, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, now saying she wants to give it time, the law time to settle in. She originally said she was open to tweaking it a bit. Now she says she's more worried about fear-mongering over this than letting the law take effect. The speaker, for his part, Carl Heastie, has always said he believes it should take effect and give it time. The governor has said he's open to some changes. A lot of this has to do with judicial discretion. Your thoughts on the state of bail reform?
Well, look, we've talked about this before, David. Let there be no mistake. In my mind, bail reform is justified. Look, if you're poor, you're going to be kept in jail. If you're rich, you find the money to go to a bail bondsman, you find the money to do what you need to do. I have no great regard for bail bondsmen. Believe me, they're making a lot of money off the backs of the poor and the rich. Nevertheless, the idea that a judge doesn't have any judicial discretion is just nuts. You know, a judge has to see whether somebody who has done something that is allegedly not violent but is violent, you slap somebody in the face, that's violence, and you walk free. That's wrong. Now, look, what's going to happen is that as this all develops, we're going to have a Willie Horton-like situation. Somebody will get let out with no bail, will commit another crime, and it will be a headline. And it will happen day after day after day. It's already happening. So you have the admirable stance of the president of the Senate and of the speaker, who basically are saying, we got to go with this because what was there before isn't and wasn't fair. You have a governor who's a little bit more moderate, who I think sees the train coming down the track and who is saying it's a work in progress. But if the Democrats, who have just won the state Senate and who have a great majority in the assembly, want to find an issue that will alienate middle-class voters, this is the one. Many of us are for bail reform, but we think there has to be some judicial discretion to impose bail when it looks like the people who have been caught basically doing a crime are going to do it again or have the potential for doing it again or are dangerous.
Well, here's an interesting story. It comes from Gannett, Allen. As Latin expressions go, Governor Andrew Cuomo has a fondness for E Pluribus Unum. The Democrat has emblazoned the nation's traditional motto on the walls of the airport in Rochester, a train station in Schenectady, a rest stop near Albany, the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, and subway stops in New York City. He's peppered it in dozens of speeches, including the Democratic National Convention. The words hung from the balcony when he was inaugurated for a third term last year on Ellis Island. And now Cuomo wants to add his favorite phrase to New York's flag. The governor unveiled the proposal as part of his State of the State address. He wants to tweak the state coat of arms, asking lawmakers to support adding E Pluribus Unum, Latin for out of many, one, to the image at the center of the state flag and official seal. I've seen some rumbling about this.
Look, he understands that we are a divided country right now. It sounded a lot to me, as I was listening to that, and I listened to every word of it, it sounded a lot to me like he was running for president of the United States. So, if Trump wins again, then I think we'll see a move towards a presidential candidacy from Cuomo. Whoever is writing his stuff right now, they're spellbinders. It was a speech that meant a lot. Some people say there was very little substance to it, but he delivered it well, and the people in the stands cheered, that's for sure. So, again, it sounded presidential to me.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustino. Democrats who lead the New York State Senate approved several measures to make it easier to vote. But a newly energized Republican minority wanted to talk about other topics, such as worries about undocumented immigrants voting and whether to repeal recently enacted bail reform measures. Our Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt.
Senate Print 6960 by Senator Kaminsky, an act to amend the Environmental Conservation Law. Senate Print 6961.
On the second day of the legislative session, the Senate lost no time in acting on a number of bills to allow more voter participation. One would make it easier for college students to vote by requiring a polling station on a campus if there are 300 or more registered voters at the school. Another bill requires counties to locate at least one polling place in its urban center. The measure stems from last November's election, when Rensselaer County located its two early polling sites in the suburbs and a rural area, but did not allow voting within the city of Troy. But the most controversial measure that the Senate approved is one that would permit automatic voter registration at state agencies, including the DMV. It was derailed in the last session because it inadvertently might have led to non-citizens being automatically registered when they applied for driver's licenses. A new law that took effect in mid-December, known as the Green Light Law, allows undocumented immigrants to apply for the licenses. Sponsor and Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris says the errors in the bill are now fixed and won't lead to non-citizens voting in New York. And he says it's a myth that large numbers of undocumented immigrants aim to vote in the state's elections anyway.
There's some suggestion that there's a group of people out there who are nefariously organizing to register and go vote under penalty, I guess, since I believe you're talking about non-citizens, under penalty of deportation. And there is no evidence that that is occurring in New York or anywhere else.
But minority party Republicans, including Senator Robert Ort, are unconvinced.
Now, I don't know if there are legions of people who are festering to register illegally. But I do know that laws that we are passing in this chamber, including this one, are certainly making it far more likely that someone who is here illegally will be registered to vote.
Senator Gianaris says there are safeguards. He says DMV staff will look over the voter registration forms for errors before they are sent on to the Board of Elections. The voting-related measures are not the only topics that the GOP would like to revisit. Senate Republican leader John Flanagan spoke on a hostile amendment proposed by the GOP. It would repeal a criminal justice reform that took effect on January 1 and ends most forms of cash bail in New York.
You enacted criminal justice reform that we think is awful.
Flanagan and other Republicans, as well as some district attorneys and county sheriffs, say the law has led to repeat offenders, including bank robbers and those accused of manslaughter, to be freed on their own recognizance.
This is going to be an unmitigated disaster. And in less than 2 weeks, it's already proven to do that. The public is less safe today as a result of the laws that were enacted last year. This is germane.
Democrats did not agree that the amendment was germane, though. It was voted down along party lines. Senate Republicans promised to continue to raise the subject on the Senate floor every chance they get. Some Democratic senators and Governor Andrew Cuomo have said they are open to making some changes to the criminal justice reforms, including possibly giving judges more discretion on when to set bail. But in order for that to happen, the state assembly would also have to agree. And so far, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he has some concerns.
When two people who are charged with the same crime end up with different bails, that gives me pause on judicial discretion. Judicial discretion invites back in bias.
The Assembly did not act on the early voting measures passed in the Senate. Hastie said his Democratic members are committed to them, but will take them up later in the session. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
The New York State Legislature reached an agreement this week with Governor Andrew Cuomo on a package of legislation aimed at improving limousine safety. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Following the October 2018 limo crash in Schoharie that killed 20, there has been an outcry for reforms to prevent such a tragedy from ever happening again. While some reforms were passed as part of the state budget last year, the legislature could not agree to additional safety measures before the end of the session in June. But a week into the new session, a deal has been reached. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins announced that a package of bills was ready to be voted on and sent to the governor's desk at a Tuesday press conference.
We are going to be improving safety. We're going to hold limousine companies and drivers accountable. And ultimately, we are going to save lives.
Joining Stewart-Cousins and other Democratic lawmakers at the state capitol were family members of those who lost their lives in Schoharie, as well as a 2015 crash on Long Island. Kevin Cushing's son, Patrick, was a passenger who was killed in Schoharie.
For the past 16 months,
Family members have worked hand in glove with both the Senate and Assembly to craft laws that represent a meaningful legacy to those loved ones that were lost to us on October 6, 2018.
In addition to working with those affected by the crash, lawmakers gathered input from committee hearings last year. The 10-bill package includes seatbelt requirements, mandates commercial driver's licenses, and drug and alcohol testing for operators of vehicles with 9 or more passengers, increases criminal penalties for violators, and allows the state to seize or impound vehicles found to be out of compliance. A hotline and a website will be created for limo customers to report concerns. Senate Transportation Committee Chair Tim Kennedy.
The list of changes we're making is vast, but we also know that there's always more work to do, which is why we're creating a task force that will further examine current limo regulations and safety training programs and evaluate the need for rear view cameras, airbags, and speed restriction devices, as well as the number of miles or years a stretch limo can be on the road, just to name a few.
Since the agreement, local lawmakers of both parties have praised the legislation, including Republican Senator James Tedisco and GOP Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh. Democratic Assemblyman Angelo Santabarbara authored legislation that would require the State Department of Motor Vehicles to maintain a public database on limo operators, including safety records, violations, and other information. He represents Amsterdam, home to many of the victims of the Schoharie crash.
I can say that these bills are important to those families. They're important to the families that lost loved ones, but they're important to our community. They're important to me. And nothing can erase the pain from the losses on that day. But they did look forward to seeing this legislation passed, and they're looking forward to seeing it signed into law as soon as possible.
In announcing his support for the bills, Governor Andrew Cuomo said in a joint statement with legislative leaders Tuesday, quote, "We stand with those who lost loved ones in these accidents and work tirelessly to help prevent future tragedies once and for all," end quote. The families are not stopping in Albany. Again, Kevin Cushing.
Our advocacy work will continue as we move forward and work with our federal legislators to pass similar life-saving legislation in Washington.
Marking the anniversary of the Schoharie crash in October, Cushing and other family members stood alongside Senator Charles Schumer, Congressman Paul Tonko, Congressman Antonio Delgado, and other officials in announcing a package of federal limo safety reforms. The package is also supported by Representative Elise Stefanik and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustinum. Officials in the North Country have been mulling over New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's State of the State speech and the more than 300-page book that details the Democrats' proposals. As the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports, there are a number of policies that area officials are optimistic about.
North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas says there are proposals in the 2020 State of the State that regional businesses like.
One is the governor's very strong commitment to electric vehicle and electric vehicle production. For us, that includes electric buses. Nova Bus in Plattsburgh is ready to produce them. Getting the state to commit to playing a positive role in closing the major cell phone service gaps in the North Country, particularly in the Adirondacks, has been a priority. And then we've been calling for small business tax relief, and he made a significant small business tax cut.
Senator Betty Little is a Republican representing New York's 45th district, which extends from Queensbury to the Canadian border. She says state policies must encourage growth and sustainability.
Anything you can do to make New York State more attractive to people is very, very important. We have a great education system. He talked about that. He really covered every area of government about. Didn't get into a lot of details, which he will when it comes to the budget address. He did talk about cell coverage for every part of the state. I am cheering on that because we need really good cell coverage in the North Country. It just has to happen.
Lake Placid Mayor Craig Randall says the governor laid out an aggressive set of objectives in the state of the state.
A lot of it is trying to address social needs of our people in New York State. His focus on trying to improve worker safety, sexual harassment, equity pay for genders. I think it's all good, and hopefully the state can accomplish much of it.
In December, Senator Little announced that she would retire at the end of her term. As he began his speech, Governor Cuomo acknowledged her years of public service.
Senator Betty Little, a school teacher who answered the call to public service over 30 years ago with principled decency and compassion. That's what Betty Little is all about. The longest serving female Republican senator ever, 18 years. Betty Little will be missed by everyone, myself included.
Senator Little says she did not know the governor planned a tribute.
That was a big surprise, let me tell you. Actually, the guy said, I'll show you to your seat. And when I got to my seat, it had my name on it. And as I started to look around, no one else had their names on their seat. So I said, what's going on here? And he said, we're going to be recognized. And I thought maybe recognized for money for Lake George, money for cell towers or something like that. So I was really flabbergasted and very appreciative of it. So bittersweet years. I had my last state in the state, but it's my 25th year in the legislature, and it was very touching.
Douglas calls the governor's recognition of Little gratifying for everyone in the North Country.
Senator Betty Little has an extraordinarily respectful and collaborative relationship with the governor that was shown yesterday. She has been a model of nonpartisan senatorship, if you will. She has been a model for showing how even a minority legislator can have a warm and effective relationship with a governor of the other party and with partners across the aisle in the other party, and that will be a continuing model of what we need to look for in state legislators from the North Country.
A link to details of the state of the state proposals is at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
In mid-December, National Public Radio aired a report that showed Albany had some of the biggest inequities among children living in different neighborhoods. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas went out and got reaction from local officials.
NPR got an early look at data showing vastly different opportunities for children of different races living neighborhoods apart. The story compared two diverse neighborhoods, Arbor Hill West Hill versus Buckingham Lake in the vicinity of Upper New Scotland Avenue. Statistics gathered by the Institute for Child, Youth, and Family Policy at Brandeis University show a sharp racial divide in access to opportunities in almost every major metropolitan area. But Albany's are among the worst. Here's Democratic Mayor Kathy Sheehan.
We inherited a situation that was, not unlike situations that exist in other Northeast cities. And instead of trying to sweep it under the rug, we have, really embraced the challenge. And I think that they highlighted a number of the things that we're doing to ensure that we bring opportunity to our neighborhoods where there is the least opportunity right now. You know, we can't deny the fact that we have neighborhoods that because of discrimination, racism, economic injustice, don't have the resources that other neighborhoods have. And I think that, that piece really highlighted the fact that there is a deep commitment on the part of this administration to work to ensure that every neighborhood is a neighborhood of opportunity for our children.
Center for Law and Justice Executive Director Dr. Alice Green characterizes the report as depressing and believes it didn't move people like it should.
You know, you don't hear a lot of calls for action, which I think the report should have done. I'm a little concerned about that because that should have been a wake-up call, because we all know that poverty is a major issue. We've not adequately dealt with that. We've not been moved to make sure that we have the best education system for our young people, because this sets the tone for everything. When kids are not educated properly, when they are left without good housing and good health care, all of this tells a sad story and it doesn't allow us to move beyond where we're at right now.
Texas Attorney Robert Franklin, a member of the board of directors for the not-for-profit National Parents Organization, says the idea that neighborhoods are important for giving or withholding opportunities for children is a fair one, but one that raises the question of whether public policy can follow from that information.
Poor people in poor neighborhoods cannot go to live in more affluent neighborhoods for very obvious reasons, and if they could, they'd have done so already. So can we then bring opportunity to poor neighborhoods? Well, I suggest that's difficult, particularly because the concept of opportunity goes very much hand in hand with the presence of fathers for children, or more appropriately, two parent families. And that's hard to import into a neighborhood.
NPO notes Franklin's opinions do not necessarily reflect its views. On its website, NPR headlines the story with a photo of one of Albany's notorious Red X buildings. The fire department has identified the buildings as having possible safety issues. First Ward Common Council member Sonia Frederick.
Yeah, that is absolutely something that needs to be addressed. It's concerning to the community. It's concerning even when you just drive by and you see all the abandoned buildings and you wish that they're truly places where people can live and flourish. So I am hoping to work as closely with the Common Council members as I can to really make sure that we're making that a better and we're decreasing the number of abandoned houses in the neighborhood.
Council President Pro Tem Kelly Kimbrough believes the Red X program is flawed and offers a recommendation.
Communicating with owners to get the information or to get in for our fire personnel to get into those houses to look at them. Because I think I would hazard a guess that a great many of those Red X houses that don't deserve to have Red X's on them. They're just vacant and have been that way. They're not necessarily unsafe, but they've been abandoned or they've been vacant for a while.
There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2003. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.